obesity is not just an aesthetic problem. It's also a chronic disease because, yeah, fat storage, so the adipocytes will produce some cytokines and pro-inflammatory peptides. So it's already a problem. Then you also have all the metabolic problems, as we mentioned, the equine metabolic syndrome or laminitis. And then you also have, yeah, other consequences like performance that will be decreased.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young Generation Oral and Gut Health Solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY technology. Research-driven. Pet-approved. Chem and NutriSurance is compelled to provide safe and delicious ingredients to improve our pets' food so they can have the best quality of life. Every day, they deliver specialized expertise, innovative products, and unrivaled support through the pet food and rendering value chain. From oxidation control and food safety to palatability and nutrition, all the way through a suite of tailored services that support you from start to finish, we ensure you're getting the most from Chemin ingredients. Chemin is compelled by curiosity to ensure pets around the world are living happy and healthy lives.
Hello and welcome to another equine-focused episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast, where we dive into the science, trends, and innovations that are shaping the way we feed our horses. I'm your host, Dr. Alex Rankovich, and today we're discussing a very important topic that affects our horses, which is obesity in horses. And so I'm very excited that we get to be joined today by Dr. Marie-Céline Hotta, a veterinarian and resident of the European College of Veterinary and Comparative Nutrition. Welcome, Dr. Hotta. Thank you so much for being here today and for giving us this opportunity to chat with you about obesity.
Yeah, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm really happy to be here.
Perfect. I'm really excited to hear what you have to say and to talk more about this really important topic. But before we jump into that, would you mind giving the audience a bit of background into who you are and introducing yourself and what drew you to equine clinical nutrition?
Yeah, so I'm a veterinarian already, as you mentioned. I graduated in 2018. I'm Belgian, so I graduated in the French-speaking part. And then after my graduation, I did an internship in a private horse clinic. It's close to Brussels and it's now part of the Equine Care Group. And afterwards, I started directly my residency. So it's in animal nutrition, so mainly focused on horses. But actually, I also have done some cats and dogs. And this is from the European College of Veterinary and Comparative Nutrition. Since then, actually, now I'm resident fully trained and I'm teaching assistant and research assistant at Ghent University. Also in Belgium, but then in the Dutch-speaking part.
Perfect. Well, you'll definitely have a lot of really good insight, I think, to share today with all of our listeners. And when it comes to obesity, and you had mentioned that you, of course, also work with dogs and cats, I think a lot of people are aware of the obesity epidemic in our companion animals, you know, including our horses as well. But based on your experience in the current research that's out there, what is the prevalence of obesity in horses?
Yeah, so if you do the difference between a horse being overweight or an obese horse, overweight horses is between 30 to 50% in most countries. So that is now in UK or in Australia or in the United States. And obesity is between 10 to 30%, I would say. And this is also quite comparable to data we have collected in Belgium.
And do you find that there's any geographical differences or big differences between countries that look at these prevalences of obesity?
I have the feeling it's a bit the same everywhere. And I think the main problem is also that horse owners tend to underestimate the body weight of their horse and the body condition scoring of their horse. It's the same actually in dogs and cats. So, yeah, it's something that we see.
Yeah. And so actually that is a perfect next step to, I guess, you know, when it comes to obesity, you sort of have to start with the assessment and assessing first whether that animal is overweight or obese. So could you talk to us about how to effectively evaluate a horse's body condition and what markers nutritionists, veterinarians and owners need to focus on?
We use the body condition scoring on a scale of 9 out of 9. So it means that the 4 and a 5 would be an ideal body condition scoring. I know that some people would consider a 6 out of 9 still as being okay. Here in Ghent, we still consider a 6 like slightly overweight, and a 7 out of 9 being really overweight, and then the 8 and the 9 out of 9 would be obese. Huh? And so 1, 2, 3 would be underweight. To assess this body condition score, you should look at the horse, but you should also palpate the horse. So that is often a mistake that we also see that horse owners do. They just look at it and they give just a general score. So what we usually do is that we look at 6 different points on the horse. And so we evaluate each point on the horse with a different score. So first the neck, of course, there we do the Christie neck score, that is from 0 to 5, with 5 out of 5 being really a lot of fat deposit there. And you can see it sometimes with this the Spanish horses, you know, this kind of stallions where it even falls over, because there is so much fat there. Of course, to be a 5 out of 5, it doesn't need to be to fall over. And then we look at the withers, the back, the tail head. And because this is also places where the horse can store fat. So you need to feel, so always with your flat hand, to see if it's rather flat or does it fall in, or rather is it... a lot of fat storage there. And then the ribs, that's also something really important. First, you should look at it. So do you see the ribs or don't you see the ribs? Well, it's maybe not that easy in winter because, horses have their winter coat. So sometimes you might not see the ribs. But you need to feel it, not just with your fingers. You should really put your hand against the ribs and see, is there a lot of fat there or not? Do I really need to push to be able to feel the ribs or not? And then behind the triceps, there you also have some fat storage. So what we do a score for each part. Of course, it's a bit subjective. And then we do the average, because in some diseases and comorbidities actually of obesity, such as EMS, sometimes they store fat on different places. So that's why it's important to evaluate each point and then just do the average.
I feel like sometimes a lot of people just go to the ribs, right? And they'll just look at the ribs and they'll sort of give a score based on that. So I absolutely agree with you that checking all these other areas is just as important. And out of curiosity, because you mentioned the Spanish horses, do you find that owners have hard time with certain breeds when it comes to body condition scoring? Do you just notice like a difference in how people body condition score breeds?
Indeed. Usually it's the easy keepers. Also, people are used to see this kind of horses being obese, like Shetland pony, for example. It's a really common horse that is, or pony that is obese. They think it's a breed standard. I think in sometimes some these shows you also see that people think it's just a breed standard, but the horse is actually overweight or even obese.
Yeah, and I'm sure that it's hard too for people when you're, to your point, like if you've never seen a Shetland pony who's of normal weight, then, you know, anything that looks overweight is just going to look normal. So, yeah, absolutely. I don't think I've ever really seen a Shetland pony that's of normal weight or underweight.
Indeed.
And you mentioned some of those core morbidities as well. And so talking about obesity, you know, once it's been identified, why is it a big deal? What are the health complications that arise? And how serious can it become if obesity isn't properly managed?
Yeah, so I think first it's good to know that obesity is not just an aesthetic problem. It's also a chronic disease because, yeah, fat storage, so the adipocytes will produce some cytokines and pro-inflammatory peptides. So it's already a problem. Then you also have all the metabolic problems, as we mentioned, the equine metabolic syndrome or laminitis. And then you also have, yeah, other consequences like performance that will be decreased. And we can easily imagine that if you have a racehorse that's in a good condition and one that is maybe slightly more overweight, yeah, he's going to perform much less due to exercise intolerance or heat intolerance. So that's also a big problem. So maybe some people that don't do competitions, they would say, yeah, but this is quite okay. But I think it also touch life quality. So if you take just the example of a senior horse that has some arthrosis, if he is overweight, it's much more weight on his limbs and on the joints. So he's going to suffer much more from his arthrosis than if he was just in a good condition. So this is the second point. The third point is also the mares. If you want to do some reproduction, yeah, they are less fertile if they are overweight or obese. And afterwards, once they are pregnant, it's also... We also see that when they are overfed, that goes also directly to the foal, and the foal has more risk on developing orthopedic problems later on. And that's the same with a growing horse. If he's overfed, you also have much more risk on orthopedic problems. Then you also have life quality, we talked, but also lifespan. And this is something that has been shown in dogs, where we have seen there was a study from Purina where they had a look to some dogs from the same litter, with some dogs having a 6 out of 9 and other ones a 8 out of 9. And they have noticed that the ones that were obese lived 18 to 14 months less than the other ones. I think for a dog is quite a big difference. So we guess it's probably the same for our horses. And if you consider your horse as a pet, yeah, you would like to keep it as long as possible, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that you mentioned that, because I find bringing that point up about lifespan, I think a lot of owners don't know that. And, you know, the ones that are especially giving a lot of food or treats out of love, when you sort of tell them, well, you know, your horse might be around longer, if you help them out with their obesity, then it does sort of, something clicks, I think, in them, and it makes them really understand a little bit better.
Yeah, and afterwards you also have other consequences like lipomas, for example, you know, this kind of ball that can hang in the cavity, and that you can cause a strangulation of the intestine. And then, yeah, it's an emergency. The horse needs to be operated because it's not possible to solve it medically. Or more risk on hepatic lipidosis if you stop eating for whatever. So I think with all these points, and all these consequences of obesity, we have already quite some argues to convince the owner to do something about it. So it's a problem for the animal. And then if you have comorbidities, it will cost also much more for the owner.
And yeah, for some owners, yeah, that might also get them thinking a little bit harder too about the changes they need to make.
Yeah.
So if a horse already is overweight, you know, the owner's on board, you've identified this horse is overweight or obese and needs to lose some weight. What feeding strategies or diet changes do you recommend to promote safe weight loss? Because I find with horses, I think that's also something that owners struggle with, is this idea that, you know, their horse should always have food and should always be eating. And then you say, well, you know, the horse needs to lose some weight. And I think that gets a little complicated for some people as well, and trying to understand that balance.
Yeah, it's quite difficult, I think, to make a horse lose weight, because you can make a perfect feeding plan, but if the owner is not following it, it doesn't make sense. So I think first is good to also, before we start to give whatever kind of advice, is to see if the owner is quite motivated to do something about it or not. I think there is probably a difference between an owner calling equine nutritionist that's just for obesity. Mm-hmm. Let's say there is no other comorbidities. Then an owner where maybe the vet just came for just to do some vaccinations. You know, I noticed that the horse is obese, that still need to convince the owner. Yeah, that's going to be much more challenging. So when I start usually to do a feeding plan for weight loss, I try to first collect a lot of information about what the owners are doing now, what is possible to do, and why it might be more difficult. So, for example, the number of meals, if the horse is at home, yeah, you can maybe advise 3, 4, 6 meals a day. But if he's in a stable where they feed only twice or three times, yeah, then you need to do a feeding plan like that, because it is much better to adapt your feeding plan based on the horse you're seeing than to make the perfect plan that owners are not going to follow, because you are going to spend a lot of time doing it for nothing in the end, because you're not going to follow it. So once you collect all the information about the current diet, so what do they feed, how much, so not only the volume, but also knowing really amounts, how many times, since when, is the pasture turnout, do they really want the horse on the pasture, do they feed separately, also about the concentrate, which kind of concentrate do they give, how much, how many times, since when, do they give supplements, which ones, you know, you can have a lot of questions to collect all this information. And yeah, and once you are there, you can and you have checked also the management and you have seen the place on pictures or in real, of course in real would always be better than on pictures, then you can start your feeding plan, I would say. The feeding plan, what I like to remember is that it should always be based on the ideal body weight, but actually I shouldn't use ideal body weight, I should use healthy body weight, that would be a bit more correct. And once you have calculated that, you have calculated the energy requirements, then you can start really your feeding plan, depending on what the people has, what they have at home. And then you choose a bit in function what is possible to do or not. We tend again to go 30% below the energy requirements. That is quite actually severe, because we want really to target the energy intake. And because obesity, you have a difference between the energy intake and the energy expenditure. So first you want to decrease the amount of energy intake and to then increase the energy expenditure. So you should play on the feeding plan, but also on the working plan. And then the feeding plan, yeah, you have different kind of strategies. And obesity is quite challenging because you need to give sufficient dry matter and fibers and limit the energy intake. So if people would feed grass hay, then we recommend usually to have a look, to have a grass hay that is more mature grass, you know, that is much lower in energy, lower in sugars, and to also be lower in protein, unfortunately. But at least you can decrease a bit the energy intake. And then depending on that, if you have sufficient dry matter, maybe you can just work with that. Or maybe you can add also a bit of straw, but you need to be careful with straw if you add it to the diet. So wheat straw or barley straw. Why? Because if it's consumed too much, you can have an obstipation. So usually we say also maximum 30% of the total roughage can be straw. Of course, water should always be available, etc. So that's for the roughage. And because we are limiting the energy intake and fiber intake, we try to still be above this 1.5% of dry matter per day, we also need to add a roughage balancer with all the vitamins and minerals to make sure there is no other deficiency. And then depending on the case, you need maybe to add also protein balancer to be a bit higher in protein, because we would like that the horse keep his muscle mass and is losing only fat. And then, yeah, for some owners that is used to give a lot to the horse, it's sometimes quite challenging to give only roughage, you know. So then you can add something that is still low in sugars and starch to make them believe, yes, I give a concentrate, but actually you're not, by giving a roughage pellet. So grass pellet, alfalfa pellet, or a bit of unmolassed beet pulp. And certainly beet pulp, because it gives you a higher volume because you're going to soak it. So they have the feeling they actually giving a lot, but they are not. So yeah, this kind of strategies you can do. And then, yeah, management is, of course, really important. So using hay nets with small holes, let's not forget it, because you have a lot of hay nets that don't do their job, or slow feeders, keep the horse busy, that he would also not start to eat his straw in his stable, for example. So yeah, that's a bit for the feeding management to decrease energy intake. And then next to that, maybe you will ask a question about pasture, because I feel it already a bit coming.
There's so many things to consider when it comes to weight loss in horses. And it's, I think, especially for nutritionists who work with dogs and cats, it's a very different beast, right? Because you've already sort of introduced, you know, the horse might be on pasture, it might not, it might be on hay, what kind of hay is it eating? It might have concentrates, it might not, it might be exercising, it might not, right? So it's all these different things. And I know sometimes too, you know, you could recommend a different hay for an owner and they might just not be able to get that hay. So it can be very, very challenging. But I'm going to ask you first about the straw, actually. Do you find that when you've made recommendations to add some straw to the diet, are they generally receptive? Because I've found in North America, sometimes they can be a little bit scared of adding straw, even when you do make all those additional recommendations that come with straw.
Yeah, they are. But yeah, I try to explain them that it's really a small amount. I don't go directly to the 30%. I try to go around maybe 10% of the diet or 20% maximum, even though we can go up to 30%. And I usually advise also to mix it with the hay. So it's not considered just as bedding. But it's true that people are afraid of feeding straw, while sometimes they are also not realizing that they do not feed sometimes enough hay and they eat from their bedding, and then there's also a high risk. And if they are a bit scared of this colic problems, then I also advise to put a bucket in the stable instead of this automatic feeder, because when it's just water being there, the horse is going to drink much more easily.
And I imagine increasing their salt intake as well, probably to help with that as well. Yeah. And so with the pasture, you had sort of already kind of commented on this a little bit. That's another one that I found can be very challenging as well. And I guess knowing, kind of helping the owners understand how to limit pasture intake without thinking that they're doing their horse a disservice. So how do you approach that typically if a horse does have access to pasture or is maybe turned out all day, but they are overweight or obese? How does someone manage that?
Yeah, it's difficult. It's actually much more easy if the horse is in the stable to make a feeding plan. So when they are on pasture, it's really difficult to limit grass intake, because if you start to limit the time they spend in the pasture, that is going to also increase their intake. Because once, if you compare, for example, a horse that is 1 hour in the pasture and he's 24 on 24, but you take the grass intake just of 1 hour, and then you put a horse just 1 hour in the pasture, the one that just go 1 hour in the pasture and is in the box, yeah, he will eat much more. So you cannot really control the grass intake by limiting the time. Then you have other solutions, like the strip grazing. That could be something also that there is no access to the full pasture, and you put some fences and then you move the fences. However, you need also to be careful to not have that part of the pasture that is overgrazed, or because then the grass is under stress, will produce more fructan. So, you know, it's all the time a bit of a balance. And then the other solution we still have is the grazing mask. The grazing mask, first of all, you need a good one that fits quite well, because, you know, this Shetland ponies, they're really
they're
smart.
Sneaky.
Yeah, they're really, really smart, and they can get it off easily. So you need really a good one that fits quite well. And the grazing mask will reduce grass intake by 80%. But if you want to really be sure that he's not eating any other calories on top, yeah, it's better to keep in the box and go on the sand paddock or sand arena to go out. Just be careful for the sand paddock or sand arena to not feed on there, because sometimes then it falls in the sand and they eat it too, so that can lead to sand colic. What is also, you see, so it's always a bit of a balance, and also not more than 6 hours then, because if the horse stays more than 6 hours without eating, then he has some troubles of the acidity in the stomach, and that can lead then to gastric ulcers. So we are not super fan of having pasture turn out when we do a weight loss program, but depending again on the horse owner you're going to have in front of you, you are going to adapt it. So sometimes I still advise the grazing with the grazing mask for a limited period of time. But I tell also the owners, the weight loss might not go as expected, because there is still this grass intake that is really difficult to estimate.
Right. And in those cases, when they really can't limit grass intake, then increase their exercise to sort of balance that a little bit better?
Exactly. So again, there should not be other comorbidities like laminitis to do some recommendations of exercise. The exercise is also something time consuming for the owner. But yeah, it's necessary. It's necessary also to keep muscle mass. So that's something that is really important. And you need always to adapt the exercise based on what the horse is able to do. Usually what we would recommend is 2 to 3 times a week, at least 20 to 30 minutes walk trot in the beginning, and then week over week, just increase a little bit, and you increase the intensity or just the periods.
I'm really excited to ask you this next question, because I've seen some of your research about this this past summer, but we've sort of brought up the horse owner again and again, and so it's pretty clear that it's not just the nutritionist, you know, working with the horse. It's also this owner that needs to be considered, and how much can they do? How much are they willing to change? So how much do you think that the owner and their education plays a role in managing and preventing obesity in our horses? And are there any key messages that you think that equine nutritionists or veterinarians really need to prioritize when they're working with horse owners?
Yeah, with horse owners, you need to be quite careful also on the words you're using. So you shouldn't say your horse is fat, or sometimes even say your horse is obese. It's still like seen sometimes as something negative, and this has also been shown in human medicine. So never use the word fat as the first thing. And then what I would like to advise is that equine nutritionists or veterinarians should teach the owners. So he would say, look, for me, your horse, it's, 8 out of 9, because when you feel here, I would give this score. And when you look at my table, for example, you take a table with you with some images, you see here. So you make him look at the horse, you make him feel the horse, and you also have some drawings, for example, that is much easier for the owners to see and to realize it. And I think the first step for them to do something about obesity is just to realize their horse is overweight or obese. So we see that horse owners cannot evaluate the body condition scoring properly, even though they have already heard about it. So this was a small study we did also in Belgium. And we also, in our small study, instead of putting the scale from the thinniest to the fattest, we have mixed them up. And there we had a quite big surprise. We saw that people overestimated it. But yeah, it means that they can still not do it properly because only 30% estimated right. So this was a bit surprising for us. Of course, you need to know that this is a small group. It was only 78 horses. So, it just showed that the experience of the person, if they know already the body condition score in advance, it didn't influence our results at all. And in our small study, we haven't used also the words obese, fat. So with the images that were just mixed randomly, there was no description. So it was only images to try to not bias the owner by... Yeah. And, you know, I have the feeling that when you have a scale that goes from 1 to 9, with the 1 out of 9 is really skinny and the 9 out of 9 is obese, I have the feeling that people would just pick the middle.
Yeah, nine. Absolutely. And just assume that's the correct one and the safest option.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we were a bit surprised by these results. But of course, yeah, it's a small region. It was only 78 horses.
It's just surprising, though, compared to dogs and cats, right? Because we have research with the opposite, that usually, you know, a pet owner will see their fat animal and think it's fine. And were all the horse owners in the study, I guess they weren't their own horses that they were body condition scoring. They were, okay.
Yeah, it's their own horse, or if it's a rider, it's the horse they ride, or if it's a caretaker, it's the horse they take care of.
Interesting. I also, I'd like to know your thoughts on this, but I find you had sort of mentioned it already, that certain disciplines will just have horses that are maybe more overweight than others, and that's sort of the standard for that discipline. So how do we tackle that when you know that a horse is overweight and the owner knows that it's overweight, but at the same time they're like, well, this is what the judges want, or this is what the horse should look like compared to the other horses that it's competing against? Like, I found that very challenging to have that conversation because the owner is aware, but at the same time they just don't want to make any changes because of what the shows that their horse will be entering.
Yeah, indeed. I think that is really, really, really difficult. We should target then the horse show and judges there, maybe then the horse owner. I think that if the owner is not motivated to do it, he will not do it. And as a lot of people would say, one is better than zero. So I prefer to do some small changes than just a complete feeding plan where you cannot... Yeah, he's not going to do anything about it. But actually, yeah, I'm agree with you that when it's about his horse shows, it's really, really difficult to make them change. I think some small changes is already better than nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's challenging.
Yeah, I think you're right, though, about... Yeah, maybe the judges need to be right. You need to kind of start from the top and work it down. Otherwise, things won't change if that's what people think is what their horse should look like. So, yeah, it's an interesting problem. And I don't know what the solution is, but hopefully one day it starts to kind of shift a little bit.
Yeah. I'm also teaching assistant, so I try to motivate the students to do the body condition scoring properly and to really explain also to the owner. I think that in the studies of vets, we should really do an effort on teaching them, and that they can teach other people. And that is actually just like a circle.
Absolutely.
You know, you influence a few people and they influence other people, and And equine nutritionists should be just the same. I think when they go around, they should explain to the owners, tell them why, what is the body condition scoring, how do they do, and just also see if the owner sees it or if he's not seeing it.
Yeah, I love that idea of kind of doing it with the owner and sort of telling them what you're seeing and what you're feeling instead of just, you know, giving them the score afterwards and leaving one from that. I think that's great.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin Nutrisurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition. We partner with a purpose. A longer, healthier lifespan for our pets. That is EW Nutrition's target. With immunoglobulins, that target is within reach. IGY are a young generation technology platform. An innovative solution that has been tried and tested over the last decades and can now yield tangible benefits. Immunoglobulins from egg yolk improve the animal's response to pathogens in the gut or in the mouth. They're easy to administer, they're perfectly safe, and they just work. Made with passion, proven with science.
So this is, you've shared some really fantastic insight, and it's been really, really great talking to you about this. But before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you sort of some more interesting, I guess, fun questions to give the listener a bit of insight about who you are as a nutritionist. So do you have any favorite resources or books related to equine nutrition that you would recommend for someone wanting to learn more?
Yeah, there is the clinical equine nutrition book that I will recommend. Of course, there is the NRC that is a bit the Bible, I would say. But yeah, this other book, they have a new version here in 2023 with the new research. So I think this is a really interesting.
I like that book. It has some good pictures too.
Yeah,
it's a little. I think it's a little easier to read than the NRC because of the figures and graphics in there. That's great. And if you were to give a piece of advice to someone who was wanting to work in equine nutrition, whether as a nutritionist or in a related role, what would you tell them as your one piece of advice?
Yeah, so first I would say maybe good luck because horse owners are not always the easiest. And then, yeah, of course, try to have a good background, try to follow a lot of courses, read a lot, have a lot of knowledge. And I think it's not only always about the knowledge, it's also about some psychology to learn how to communicate, how to talk to the owner, how to motivate them, And yeah, so it's knowledge, but it's also a lot of communication, I think, certainly in the field of nutrition. I think this is one of the most important skills to have.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. You can have all the knowledge of the world, but if you can't pass it on to the people that need it, then it's you haven't really done a lot. So I think that's really great. And our last question, if you could own any horse, real or fictional, alive or non-alive, is there any horse that you would own?
Really difficult question.
There's so many good options.
Really difficult question. I might say maybe the unicorn, because it's like, I don't have a real like... example, but I really am fascinated by the unicorns. Also, my boyfriend is from Scotland, and it's the emblematic animal there. So it's a unicorn.
Okay, and unicorns, do they fly, or is it just the Pegasus? I guess you can do whatever you want with your unicorn.
Yeah, I think you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's a good one. You can't fly with a regular horse, so that's perfect. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hota. It's been so lovely talking with you, and thank you for sharing your time and all your expertise. It's been a pleasure having you, and I'm sure our listeners will take away a lot from the discussion, hopefully look at their horses and think about obesity a little bit more, and hopefully we can have you back for another episode in the future.
Yes, thank you very much much for the invitation. I really like to do it, and maybe see you next time.
Yeah, of course. And with that, that concludes another episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. And please don't forget to subscribe and stay up to date as we talk about other fun equine health and nutrition related topics.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.